Have you ever experienced meeting a stranger and then realizing through the conversation that actually the two of you have a lot in common, or that the two of you kind of know some of the same people? Well, that was my experience with Laura Chandler this week. And as our conversation unfolded, and I didn't even get to this story with her, that I actually have had a conversation with Matthew Fox, that great thinker, that great religious leader, that great philosopher, after I walked the Camino. Laura talks a little bit about Matthew Fox later on in this episode, but as we had our conversation, I came to understand that she and I have kind of bumped up against some of the same people in this world. And that is very, very cool. Either we have incredibly great luck or we have incredibly great taste. I'll leave it up to you to decide. Laura is such an accomplished human being. And first, she's a writer, teacher, and award-winning songwriter. She's worked in publishing, music, and video production, as well as many alternative therapies. In 1988, she opened her recording studio and publishing company, Red Cow Records and Music Publishing, and her music has appeared in lots of film and television. But wait, there's more. Laura is also the co-founder and executive director of the Foundation of the Sacred Stream, which is a school for consciousness studies in Berkeley, California. A little later in this episode, we also talk about the latest book that Laura has co-written with Isa Gucciardi. And in the Easter egg, the kind of lengthy Easter egg that happens after the end of the credits, you'll get a greater, more in-depth, see what I did there? Detailed report on what this book is about. But it's called Depth Hypnosis, A Path to Healing, Power, and Transformation. All right, that's enough of me talking. Let's get to Laura and our conversation about alchemy, transformation, and so many other things.
When my grandfather died and I saw the clock, it was basically an out-of-body experience. And I saw the nurse pounding on his chest. And when I woke up, you know, I told my mom that I'd had this dream. I was maybe 10 or 11. And she got freaked out because he had died at that exact time. And so it scared me as a child. And so, you know, I was like, I don't want this anymore. I don't want the ghosts anymore. I don't want the sight, you know, and we moved and I kind of shut it down.
If you had to go to a group and introduce yourself, or maybe even if you had to go to a party, you were at a party and someone came up to you and asked you to introduce yourself, how would you do that?
It is a stumper. I could be cheeky and say, I'm a human working on being, learning to be human. I think there are all the things that we tend to think of ourselves as, you know, accomplishments that we've achieved or things that we've done in our life. Often that's a question around, you know, what we do in the world, work-wise especially. But I would say if I had to describe myself just as a being, I'm someone who really cares and I want to be of some help in the world. I want to care. I want to be able to do something that makes a difference, not in the sense that everyone knows who I am because I made a difference, but because it's important to me and it always has been, you know? So, I really like nice people. Like I love nice people. So that's, you know, it's such a pleasure to be around nice people. So that's who I am, I guess.
Well, and I think two things come to mind. One, I love nice people too. Huge fan, big fan. Yeah. And to me, just energetically, it's easier to be nice than to kind of muster up the energy or the chi or what have you to be mean or say something cutting to someone or something that's rude to a stranger. So for me, default position is nice because I'm lazy and I don't want to spend that much energy. The second thing, I really appreciate you saying that, you know, you're doing this work, helping the world, helping your community, not because you want to become famous, but because I think you recognize that every little bit, every little contribution helps. And if you have just you and you envision yourself as a stick, that breaks. But if you have 20 people and they're each a stick and you put that bundle of 20 together, I mean, no one's going to break that group or that bunch of sticks. And I think it's important to understand and remember that together we're stronger. And when we show up for each other, we're stronger. And so I'm grateful to that. And, you know, each of us is going to do something for the world or for our community in different ways. That's also true. You know, my way is different than your way. And I do want to ask you, so your institute, studying consciousness, is this one way that you've decided to give back to the world or contribute to the knowledge in the world?
Oh, definitely. And, you know, I'll say our organization is called the Foundation of the Sacred Stream. And part of our mission is really to illuminate sort of the aspects of traditions, of cultural, spiritual, artistic, the commonality of those traditions and how, you know, we invite people to speak. We have different events. We have Lorna Byrne, who is an international bestselling writer, who is also an Irish mystic. And then we'll have Robert Thurman. Yet she wrote Angels in My Hair, and it's an amazing book. And she sees angels and convert. She's an amazing person. And then we'll have like Robert Thurman, who's this Buddhist scholar, or Thupten Jinpa, Buddhist scholar, Matthew Fox, who's a Christian theologian and wrote The Coming of the Cosmic Christ, and many different Muslim teachers and indigenous teachers. And we want to bring forward, have them share what aspects of their cultures, are relevant and expose people to that. And because everyone's going to be moved by something different. Everyone finds the path to consciousness, the path to themselves, the path to knowing themselves more deeply and to healing. It's different for everyone. So the name, the Sacred Stream, refers to that stream that informs all traditions, all, you know, aspects of our being. And yet we, as cultures and traditions and, artistic practices, spiritual practices, we look a little different. So the stream that's informing it, along that stream will have different grasses and trees and flowers. And so there are different aspects to the cultures, but at the heart of it is something that we're all connected to and all informed by.
I really appreciate, I mean, I grew up overseas, so I was privy to a lot of different, you know, arts, architecture, food, et cetera, et cetera. And I think at a young age, it just really engendered inside me this love for what is different and unusual or outside of my culture. And I have this affinity that I can't get rid of. It's just inside me. And I think there are a lot of people who are just very, I don't know, I'm just going to say in the States, okay, that are very insular and inward facing. And for me, you know, I'm like, you're missing a big part of life, which is being excited about difference, being excited about what other cultures have to contribute or say, or how they've interpreted the world. And I'm just so appreciative that you've created this space, this organization, where there is a way for them to contribute or to add to the knowledge of the world through the conversations and classes that you have. I'm grateful. How did you come up with this idea? And was it daunting?
Well, it's been an experience. It's been a path for sure. And I co-founded the organization in 2003, over 20 years ago, and with my partner, Issa Gucciardi, and we envisioned that I had been a touring musician, an award-winning songwriter, recording artist, and she was a psychologist and also a student of, you know, a long time practicing Buddhist and studied shamanism and had a therapy practice. And she created this modality, this healing modality called depth hypnosis. And that's the book that we've written that we'll talk about later. But depth hypnosis combines a number of different aspects to create a really kind of a rapid path, very transformational, and it can be very rapid. It's unique for each person. You know, it's not a cookie cutter kind of thing. There's no dogma to it. It's very experiential. But when she opened her doors to her practice, within about a year, she had no room in her practice. And she's like, I have to train people in this modality. So she started training psychologists and different people interested in working with it. And we realized, well, we need a home where the classes belong. So we created this foundation to first house the classes. And so then we had developed programs in applied shamanism, integrated energy medicine, and applied Buddhism, and trainings in depth hypnosis, and different classes that came out of that. So that's really how it started. And I want to share this with you because I need to send you a copy of the book, and I will. But in the preface, Issa talks about her sort of early, her childhood, and the things that brought her to really be focused, everything that contributed to her kind of creating depth hypnosis. And her childhood was similar. She lived abroad. She lived in Hawaii before it was a state. She lived in Mexico, where she learned from the Huichol, the indigenous Huichol people there. She lived in Saudi Arabia as a young girl, where she had to wear the covering and burqa, and you know there was the weekly slayings. You know, there were public killings, and she's, you know, so then she was educated to about 12 in Saudi Arabia, and you couldn't be educated as a girl after 12. So she had to go to Lebanon, Beirut, where another Arab country where that was very different from the ones you'd come from. So she got to Beirut, and it was just this marvelous, you know, open-minded society. And she fell in love with, you know, the people and the culture and the herbs that grew there. And she met many Bedouins in Saudi Arabia. So she studied with all of these indigenous cultures just as a young girl. And then that led her to study linguistic and cultural anthropology and comparative religion. And so, yeah, so she talks about that in the book, and that certainly is present. And she speaks six languages, and she ran a translation company. So we sort of look at depth hypnosis is in part this translation of information to help people connect more deeply with themselves and to know themselves and to really find the places, you know, in themselves, in the shadow that they weren't aware, that are sort of causing them to, you know, engage in behaviors that aren't healthy for them or have patterns of behavior that repeat that they don't understand. So that's why we created the foundation. And it's just been kind of a remarkable path for us, and you know, we've learned a lot along the way.
Okay, thank you for all that. Your partner sounds lazy.
She is
totally hasn't really done anything with their life.
No.
But honestly, I mean, I was just talking to a dear friend last night. She said, oh, yeah, I have a friend who speaks five languages. And I was like, I'm so jealous. You know, I don't have that kind of brain or that capacity. My brain does other things, which I'm grateful for. But language, I think, is so utterly gorgeous that anyone who has an affinity for picking them up and learning them, I'm envious. I'm just going to put that out there.
It's really fun to travel with her, I have to say.
Oh, I'm sure. I just, all of that is so gorgeous and fabulous, and how funny, because I mean, I do think growing up overseas changes. I mean, she sounds, I wonder if she's heard, I'm sure she has, third culture kid. She sounds like, because there's a wiki entry for us where we grow up outside of the culture. And it's actually fascinating, the studies they've done on personality and what it, how it shapes you as a child. Mm-hmm. What I would love to address and talk about is the shadow, which, yeah, you know, a lot of people, I'm just going to put it out here that I love the shadow. I love darkness in general, not like emotional darkness or whatever, but I've always thought, you know, as a writer and as someone who thinks about the universe and everything, for me, the exciting, exciting place is the shadow, where the darkness is. And yes, scary things can come out of the shadow, but I also think inside the shadow is where all the richness is, like the loam and the dirt, and things grow from the shadow. So I've always, since I heard about depth hypnosis like 15 years ago, depth psychology, I've just always been kind of enamored of the shadow, because it just feels like a really fecund place. Mm.
Well, you know, I think that we have, first, I agree with you. There's nothing to be afraid of the shadow, but I think most of us, the things we don't know, that the things we're not aware of yet, those things that are hidden in the shadow, which is why it's called the shadow, are the things that run us. And so my thought on consciousness is that we're trying to illuminate what is in the shadow, and not in some like overly forced way, but in a natural way, and, you know, in a way that's comfortable for the person. And as they encounter these aspects of the self that are hidden from them, they illuminate that, then they're actually bringing healing. And most of the time they're like, oh, wasn't so bad, you know. But I liken depth hypnosis, when I'm working with a client, I liken it to spelunking into, you know, with our little headlamp on, you know. And so we're spelunking into the dark and we don't know what we're going to find. I'm just there to support and offer assistance if needed. And the brave client is spelunking into their psyche in this way and illuminating things. And there's so much healing and so much freedom, liberation that comes from this. And it's not unlike, you know, when you hear, you know, mindfulness practices or Buddhist practices that involve, you know, looking inward and paying attention to what's arising and that kind of thing. We're really trying to know ourselves at the deepest levels. And that is freeing.
I saw this really fabulous acupuncturist. He did Tuina in Portland for a while. And, you know, he was very, very sensitive, attuned to people's bodies, the healing process. And he said to me when we were talking about one of my stories, right? And he said, oh, so that little gremlin lives inside of you. And I thought, oh my gosh, what a helpful image for me. This is years ago. I have done a lot of work since then, but what a helpful image as far as when I react without thinking, without understanding why this reaction is coming out, it is because of a story in my past or a trauma or what have you. And I thought, gremlin, that is a great way to think about it. But now I've kind of, when I see people who maybe act out or who are grumpy or maybe act in a way that they wouldn't normally, I think, oh, there's a hungry ghost. There's something that's feasting on you and I can see it. You probably don't know it's there, but it's coming out a little bit. And I think all of these kind of names are really helpful to understand the ways in which we move in the world that might not be beneficial for others or for us. But yeah, thank you for your explanation about the shadow. I'm curious about the consciousness aspect, the studying that you're doing there on that, around that. I'm a science aficionado. I have been one since I was a child. And right now, my kind of, I don't know, flight of fancy or where my mind goes as far as consciousness is that it's non-local and that we're all connected to everything at all times. Some of us are better at accessing that non-local consciousness than others. Those would be people who are maybe talk to the angels, as you stated, or, you know, have other senses. Have you kind of formed your opinion on what you think consciousness is? What would that be?
Well, I think you describe it. That's a really great explanation, description of it. I think we may never have a clear definition of it, but I think, you know, I mean, we humans are, you know, we operate at a sort of a, in science, especially Western science, it's great, but it's got some parameters on it, you know, it's data driven and that's great. Consciousness works outside of data, you know, so, but it can be experienced. And there are other scientific models, Vedic and Buddhist science that consider experience legitimate data points, if you will. So, and we're moving there. We're moving in that direction as a culture, and you know, we're progressing. But I would say consciousness, the way we work with it in depth hypnosis, let's say, is we're accessing a larger realm. We'll say realm of consciousness, then we're operating in say our ordinary day-to-day focus. Now, the more that you're accessing sort of the larger consciousness, the more aware of it you are in your day-to-day. So it's less surprising. And it's certainly, you know, I'll say the way we work with it in depth hypnosis, we're using the altered state through shamanic journeying, hypnotic induction, to help someone relax and go in to sort of a meditative state, hypnotic state, where they're able to go beyond the conscious mind to access information that is not as readily accessed by the conscious mind, because the conscious mind is tricky. The conscious mind, it's brilliant in its own way, but it doesn't know what it doesn't know. So it operates on these different sort of stories, you know, that we tell ourselves. It's focused on our five senses, you know, like what I can see, taste, smell, hear. And so we get very focused on a particular point. But when you're going into a larger, accessing a larger consciousness, you're going beyond those. You're opening those senses and using your sixth sense of intuition to perceive. And it's so easily accessible to all of us. And many people are accessing it and know what I'm talking about. But for anyone who's like, oh, I can't be hypnotized, it's really not someone doing something to you. You know, it's you relaxing and tuning in and quieting the mind so that you can experience something larger. And I'll just tell you a little about how depth hypnosis works, if that's okay. All right. And so when we're working in depth hypnosis, we're always connecting to something that the client or the person engaging in depth hypnosis feels connected to. That's something larger than themselves. So for some of them, it's so that they have a source, a source of power within them. So they may experience it as an angel or as God, or just as something that, you know, they have their own experience of it before we even do any work, and it, no one's telling them what it needs to be. And so it's very individual for the person. It's very personal for them. So they're empowered going into the work. Now, we may be going in on a feeling of, you know, a sadness, like I have, you know, or anger or frustration, you know, I got fired from work and, you know, I have this problem at work, or these people, you know, are, you know, and I'm angry or whatever it is. So we go in or you know, they're whatever the issue is, you're going in on that feeling. It's very somatic. And you go in on that. And then we don't know where we might end up. So it might be we use regression therapy. Regression therapy happens in spontaneously in depth hypnosis. We don't say, let's go back to that time that you thought you remember when you were, you know, beaten up or something. Instead, focusing on that feeling, you're going back to the first or most significant time when this feeling occurred. It might be a past life. And I want to just say the caveat is you don't have to believe in past lives to work with depth hypnosis. Now, a lot of people do believe in past lives, and you can see it as like, oh, the recurring pattern occurs, you know, across time. But you don't have to believe in it because it can just be the way that the mind is communicating something to you in a form that you can perceive and understand. So you don't have to buy that, but we work with that. You may be in a prenatal regression. You may be in a Bardo state regression, between lives regression. Again, don't have to believe it. We just work with it. But an age regression. And what a lot of times happens is you'll have an experience where you experience, like, let's say a trauma. Now, trauma is a big title these days. And I want to say that we all experience trauma, or what I would define as something that occurs in our lives that's overwhelming to us in the moment. And that is part of being human. Now, there are different kinds of trauma and very horrible things that happen, but you might have something that you didn't even know was traumatic for you. Let's say you were 4 years old, right? And you got lost in the grocery store, separated from your mom, and you thought, you panicked. Well, that's overwhelming. And then and it's all over in 5 minutes. The grocer person finds your mom, gives you a lollipop, and you're on your way. But for some people, that experience doesn't stay with them. It just isn't. It isn't their pattern. For other people, that stays with them. So this becomes like a soul loss or a part of the self that's stuck outside of time. And we do what is called a soul retrieval or a parts integration to bring that part back. And this is based on some shamanic idea of soul retrieval, which is why we do refer to it as soul retrieval. And it's a very powerful healing modality. But what we're also paying attention to is what you were telling yourself in that moment of that panic, that trauma. And for some people, they're like, I am never going to let my mom out of my sight. And they grow up to be really clingy, you know, in relationships. I'm overly generalizing to make the point. Or on the opposite spectrum, they're like, I can't trust my mom. I can't trust anybody. They have an attachment disorder and they grow up. Right. And then they meet the clingy one, and then they have, you know, then they're in couples counseling. But because oftentimes there's a similar wounding that brings couples, you know, that couples are learning from each other by having, and they learn from each other the different ways of how they're managing, and they learn about their own issues. I'm getting pretty far. I hope I'm not getting too far afield. I'll just say few other things that go on in depth hypnosis are, you know, well, we might encounter energy, an energy that's not really your, doesn't belong to you. And we may, you know, when you mentioned the gremlin, you know, there may be something that attached to you. And it becomes very apparent, and you're able to release that. And the client's doing all the work. The client is doing the soul retrieval or the releasing the energy. There's energy work that's going on. You know, I'm holding space in a particular way, in a way I've been trained to do. There can be energy exchanges that will present themselves, and we just deal with what comes up. And that's it in a nutshell, something that's pretty complicated, but that's a little bit about what depth hypnosis is.
Thank you. thank you for that explanation. And I know these complex kind of beautiful modalities, how do you even distill them down so that you can give your 30-second elevator pitch or whatever? It's like, it's impossible. It's impossible. But that was gorgeous and so helpful and lovely. And over the course of doing this podcast, the one thing that's been really interesting is how much, you know, everybody's heard of talk therapy for decades and decades, right? But this new word somatic, which is the release or the working with, or maybe kneading, like you knead bread, memories or traumas or incidents from our lives that are kind of like hidden in little places in our bodies that we don't understand. And I've talked to quite a few people who are doing work in that way. And I'm actually seeing an orthobiomist right now down south in Cerritos, who's changing my life with the work that we're doing somatic wise. It's been kind of just astonishing, actually. But again, like one size doesn't fit all. You know, what works for me might not work for someone else. But I wanted to just go back because, you know, my second question of the podcast always is, did you grow up in a religious household? And earlier you referenced, you know, the shamanism and, you know, some people might say depth psychology, because for me, it's so beautiful and expansive. And it's something that has a potential to change lives and change people's orientation to the world and others, you know, and religions can do that. I mean, how was it when you were a child? Like, did you grow up in a religious household? And are you surprised by what you're doing now based on your childhood?
I came from a religious background, like a Baptist grandmother. My father's side, we're from Atlanta, Georgia. So back before Atlanta was, you know, a big city. I mean, it was a city, but it was like really small town. And I grew up in Decatur. I didn't grow up there. I moved to New Jersey pretty early on. So it was quite culture shock. But all of my people are from this area in Atlanta. And so my grandmother was, and grandfather and my uncle and, you know, all these people I adore were Baptist, you know, very strong Baptist. And my mother's side was Methodist. And I think when we moved to New Jersey, there was a moving away from, like, say, the church, let's say. But I certainly had that as, you know, an influence. And I, for myself, in just sort of trying to understand, you know, as I grew, like what was this? Because I always felt a very deep connection to Jesus. Like, I really like that guy, you know, love that guy. And I don't know that I liked all the other stuff that was going on around that guy, but have always felt it. And it's a felt sense. And here again is what we're talking about is like in depth hypnosis, we're talking about experience, the experiential. And so knowing spirit in your own way is very important. So I think at 15, I was like, I think I'm agnostic, you know, or I think I'm atheist. I just said, I think I'm atheist. And then I had some really powerful spiritual experiences. And I was like, wait, maybe I'm just atheist. I mean, agnostic. Sorry, I'm confusing those two terms. I think I'm just agnostic. As a child growing up, I always knew I kind of moved between wanting to be a writer or a musician. And I was drawn to pretty early on spirituality. I was very fortunate in college. I got a degree in literature and also minored in psychology. I had a mentor in college who was part of the humanistic psychology movement. And I had no idea how fortunate I was. He studied with Abraham Maslow. And I know, and I recently, you know, I just took it for granted, like, oh yeah, the humanistic psychology movement. But I didn't realize how limited it was and how like it, there weren't many programs and how they were overrun, but, you know, and I got him, you know, so it, I see the path. And I recently spoke to him. We had lunch last year about this time. And I was asking him all these questions about Abraham Maslow. And he was telling me like how hard it was to get a, you know, a PhD in humanistic psychology because the programs are being cut and they're all becoming like scientific and like, you know, test the monkeys and, you know, do all these bad things. And it's such a rich, the human potential movement, humanistic psychology, now transpersonal psychology, it's so rich. And it's so about the spirit of the human. You know, when we go back to what you were talking about with, you know, this idea of the somatic, you know, and depth hypnosis is definitely works with in a somatic way. It's this idea that the mind, body, spirit are connected. And I think that we are much more open to that now than we were even 20 or 30 years ago when Issa was creating depth hypnosis. I mean, she was on the cutting edge of bringing shamanism into a therapeutic setting or working with Buddhism in a therapeutic setting, you know, because there's, well, there are reasons why it was not, you know, it wasn't seen, it wasn't as okay back then. But now, like shamans, for instance, shamanic healers, like actual indigenous shamans, they don't see a difference between a spirit in a body or out of a body. You know, it's like we're all spirits. And when you're treating a person for, say, a broken leg or an ailment, you are also treating them as a shamanic practitioner, as a real, you know, or an indigenous shaman. You're treating the spirit as well. You don't break your leg and not have a trauma. You know, there's, you got to check for those soul parts that got left on the side of the road, you know? So that I hope is more and more of how we can, we're not there in medicine right now, but more and more people are opening to it. And, you know, as I'll say, Issa, my partner, every year she gives a talk to UC Berkeley pre-med students on either shamanism or, you know, different alternative forms of healing. And she once encountered in a doctor's appointment, she was having some minor surgery and she had gone in to see this, her practitioner at Kaiser, who it turns out had been to been to one of those lectures. And this person, fabulous, she's like, I would like to do some energy medicine work on you at Kaiser. So, you know, so anyway, the world is changing.
Thank God. That's all I have to say.
Yeah.
Thank God, because it is really interesting. My mother is definitely of the old school. She grew up, had me late in life, grew up where women, their choice was nurse, teacher, secretary. And one of the things she always impressed upon me when I was growing up is, you have no idea how many more options you have. Now, granted, I did grow up in the 70s and 80s, so not as much as there is today, but at that time there were more options. But she's definitely of the old school that Western medicine is where it's at. You know, she thinks that my podcast is, I don't know. I don't actually ask her what she actually thinks about my podcast because I'm kind of scared of the answer, but like, she doesn't believe in any of this stuff that my guests come on and share or that I share. You know, I don't even know what she thinks of me at this point because I'm so far from what she believes. I mean, we still love each other, but you know, once you have a few experiences that seem to be outside of the scope of quote unquote, the box that we're all supposed to live in, the I don't know what normal life is supposed to look like, you can have a choice and say, okay, that didn't actually happen. I imagined it. Or you can turn the other direction and say, holy cow, that was exciting and intriguing, and I want to know more. And then you can begin walking down that path to investigating more. And certainly, like shamanism is one path, Buddhism, there are so many, meditation, you know, breath work. There are so many different ways of, you know, kind of beginning that journey. And I'm just grateful that your organization is here in the world, because I was looking at it and kind of sighing wistfully about all the classes that I want to take. So there will definitely be a link in the show notes so that people can check out what your offerings are. And I can't wait for you to come to Santa Fe. Well, I do want to ask you the central question. of the podcast, and we'll talk about your book and all of that. I feel like I could talk to you forever. But the main question of the podcast is, I would love for you to share either one story or two stories, whatever you feel like sharing, of something that has happened in your life that you consider to be magical, miraculous, or mysterious. I would love for my listeners to hear what you have to say, because I suspect that your well of stories is very, very deep.
Well, I feel like I thank you for that question. And I want to say, and I want to thank you for your podcast, because I think that one of, its tenets here is to help people, embrace what is not considered, that is experience that is outside of the norm, or what we can say is outside of the scientific materialist view of the world, right? Which still dominates, but less so than it did 20 years ago. And that scientific materialist view is that, nothing happens after we die. Anything that isn't provable is not real. And all this stuff is hooey or woo-woo or whatever it is. And that's just not true. I mean, we all, I feel that we don't have to be, it's normal, and all we're talking about is aspects of this world that are not part of ordinary physical reality, that are part of the unseen realms. And, these things we experience, and I think the more that we acknowledge that we're experiencing it, and instead of dismissing it, the more that we're able to open and begin to trust our intuitive abilities. When you hear that phone ring and you're like, I bet that's my mom, or who you know who it is, then acknowledge that you were correct, for example. So for me, I have a lot of they don't feel extraordinary to me so much anymore. And I think it's just because I live my life in the realm of, this is just like, my experience of going to the grocery store is part of my day. Sometimes something else will be part of my day. And an aside, I lived with 8 Tibetan monks here in my home for a year. I did a tour for them, and it was remarkable because, they're very tuned in to the non-ordinary side realm. And it's not like, another thing I want to just say about, and I will tell you a story. I'm just prefacing it. We have this thing around, I've listened to your podcast and I've heard you talk about ghosts, right? So we talked before about spirits in bodies, spirits out of bodies. There's a thought in that, sometimes, I won't get into what maybe keeps them here, but this idea that we have in our culture still is that it's scary, right? So when I was a kid, I lived basically, I now know, in a haunted house. It was a farmhouse in New Jersey from 1848, and only 3 other families had lived there. And it was really scary, And I had a lot of experiences. I saw a lot of things. I was very open. And my mom, my parents were just clueless until things started happening and started noticing that for them. But if you think about it, we have, it doesn't matter if it's something positive that happens, my dog that passed showed up in the storm and I was lost and led me out, If you hear it on TV, that wonderful, glorious, kind of beautiful story will have this, music that'll be just like, oh, right. So we're really conditioned. And I know when I had prescient dreams as a kid, my dad would tell me that he didn't tell me until I was in my 30s. I didn't even know he was clued in at all. But he said, yeah, when you were 4, I'd come back from business trips and you'd tell me everything I did and you'd ask me about this person I was talking to and that person I was talking to. I don't remember any of that. So don't know what made him wait so long to tell me that. But, you know, it's just being tapped into something. I remember I had a dream when my grandfather died, and I saw the clock. It was basically an out-of-body experience. And I saw the nurse pounding on his chest. And when I woke up, you know, I told my mom that I'd had this dream. I was maybe 10 or 11. And she got freaked out because he had died at that exact time. And so it scared me as a child. And so, you know, I was like, I don't want this anymore. I don't want the ghosts anymore. I don't want the sight, you know, and we moved and I kind of shut it down until it started coming up again, you know, in my late 20s. So I started having experiences again, but it still can be unnerving, you know. But I will tell you a story if that's okay. Okay. So when I toured a lot, so this is before I began working in the field that I work in, where this stuff is not unusual at all. And I would often, you know, we'd stay in these old hotels or different places, and you would feel something, you know, like something's here, you know, just a little, you know, acknowledge that. But I started to ask, you know, is there like a ghost here, you know? And oftentimes the proprietor would be like, why, yes, there is, you know? And one time I was on tour with an artist named Kedmo, and I was opening for him, and I was staying at this hotel in Boise, old hotel downtown. And I came in and I was like, this is an old hotel. So I asked the person at the desk, is this haunted? You know, have you ever had? And they're like, well, I've never had an experience, but you know, a lot of people say it is. And, you know, usually it's on these two floors. And I was like, oh, could I not have a room on that floor then, please? And so he gave me a room because I need to sleep, you know, I got to sleep. I'm on tour. So I got into my room, and I was like, I felt it. And I was like, I am very uneasy in here. And I said, it wasn't feeling good, you know? So I said, hey, I'm just here for the night, not going to bother you. And then I thought about it. I'm like, you know, I'm just going to go change rooms. So I went down and said, wouldn't it be okay if I changed rooms? So I changed rooms. I got on the haunted floor, supposed haunted floor. It's perfectly fine. The room was clear. And so I went, so the next morning I had my show. I woke up, I was checking out. There's a different person at the desk. And I said, hey, is this place haunted? Yeah, I just want to get a sample. You have a ghost here? And they said, you know what? The person who was on last night saw the ghost. So the guy who never had the experience, you know, I just had the experience. So that was funny, I thought.
To tell you, it's so interesting and funny how you and I have these people in common, because I lived in Portland, Oregon for a while, and I worked at this restaurant, and Keb Mo came in one day, and he was there with his gorgeous wife and one of her dear friends. And so those two were just talking to each other, and he was kind of sitting on the, and I was waiting tables, and they were my table. And he and I ended up having this really incredible conversation, because it was kind of slow, because I had just gotten accepted to seminary. And so we were talking about all that stuff and like my journey and stuff. And at the end, he said to me, you know what? I mean, he said two things. He said, you know what? I actually think you might be an angel. And I said, oh my God, Keb Mo, I will take that. I will take it and run with it. And then the other thing, they left. And then I saw him pause on the sidewalk. He like pulled out his wallet. He came back and he gave me $20 more. And he said, you are not getting paid enough for the work you're doing in this world. And then he left. And I thought, oh my gosh, I just thought of myself in a different way. He changed the way that I viewed myself. And I think it's a good example of how, you know, what it was probably a powerful comment for him, but for me, it was even more powerful because it kind of like reoriented my relationship with myself. But you brought him up, and then we have Henry in common. I think that's really, really fun. I love those connections.
It's amazing. And what an amazing story about Kedmo. You should have him on your show. You should reach out to him. That's, I mean, what an amazing, I mean, he would love to hear that, I bet.
Oh yeah. It was amazing.
That's it. It's a wrap on another episode of the Bite-Sized Blessings podcast. I hope you enjoyed meeting Laura. And as usual, there will be a link in the episode show notes to not only Laura's website, but also the book that has recently come out that she's written with Isa. Please take the time and do a deeper dive on what these two human beings are bringing into the world. Thank you for listening, each and every one of you. I so appreciate it. Please do share this podcast with friends and family. I think more than ever, we need good, solid, beautiful reminders that this world has the potential to be an incredible place for each and every one of us. Thanks for all the ratings and reviews. As always, I'm always, always hustling for more. So, you know, if you do share it with a family member, remind them that they have the choice to give a rating or a review at their leisure. Thank you for listening. And here's my one request. Be like Laura. Be open to the alchemy of transformation. I mean, we really don't have a choice in this life. Things are going to change around us. We need to be adaptable. We need to be fluid. We're going to need to change. So be like Laura. Be open to the alchemical process of change. Be open to the alchemical process of transformation. Because who knows where that road is going to take you? I'm guessing it's going to be to a shinier, brighter new you, because that's usually what change evokes. But who knows? It could be life in another country. It could be the trip you never dreamed you'd take. It could be moving into the house you've always, always wanted. Or it could be changing you, as we saw in The Grinch, from someone whose heart was way too small to someone whose heart was so big and so perfect that it changed the world. So be like Laura, lean into the change, never knowing or even suspecting just how much more glorious your life is going to become.
Yeah. Well, and I, you know, this, I don't know how much time you have. We haven't even talked about you and your incredible music career and your, just how talented you are. You're also like frigging talented, just like your partner and all these different gorgeous ways that we haven't even touched on. Clearly you're lazy as well. I mean, I think I should just put that out there, everyone. And now you have a book.
Yeah.
You have a book. Yeah. Which is no mean feat to like actually think of something you want to write about, but then actually sit down and do the work and then do the 10,000 times of editing and cleaning it up, which is, you know, kind of like walking through the swamp of sadness every time. And so it's, I mean, just, and then, you know, getting a publisher or print, I mean, just getting out in the world. So, yeah. I mean, how did you even audaciously, because I think the creation of a book is so audacious. Like, how did you audaciously kind of come up with the premise of this book and then decide what you were going to write about?
Well, you know, that is, my partner is driving that. Although there are some books that I would like to write. She is pretty driven to, and Issa Guicciardi is a pretty well-known, you know, teacher, spiritual teacher and thought leader. And she is driven to leave, it's her legacy, but it's really, she's like, I've got to get everything down so that I can leave it for posterity. You know, she is very driven to like make a difference. And she makes no bones about, as nor do I, that like people need to get conscious. People need to wake up to themselves, wake up, you know, connect deeply to yourself, know what's in the shadow, heal yourself so that we can stop killing each other, so we can stop destroying the planet. And it's like, this is for the planet, you know, like if the more people who are, you know, healing themselves and being awake to things, well, that's how it changes. So we've written three books. This is our third. One is called Coming to Peace. It's about healing relationships externally. And healing conflict within ourselves and within others, but also internally, because we have internal conflicts. We have that, you know, outward yes, unconscious no, right? Things going on. And so we need to learn about that in ourselves. You know, people come to me and they're like, I don't know why I'm not in a relationship, but inside they're absolutely don't want the relationship, and they have to heal that, that inner conflict. So Issa's written a book called The New Return to the Great Mother, which is a book on feminine power and the sacred feminine and these aspects of our biology that that take us through initiations throughout our lives. And it's a lovely book. It's a really powerful book, and it's an easy read. And then now we have Depth Hypnosis, A Path to Healing, Power and Transformation, which is... I talk about it in the book. I talk about it. It's taken us 20 years to write. And we started out that we were going to write the book. And then we founded the foundation and started all the training programs. And, you know, and things evolve over time. And it's taken that long. And we're fine with that. Although I see there are probably other aspects to that we can write about from this perspective. But this is really a book that helps people understand what the modality is. And it's not self-help in the sense that you are being given a ton of tools, but you're being given a lot. Well, there are tools in the book, but you'll be given a lot to think about. There are case studies where you're going to recognize yourself in that. And it can help you to start to think about your inner world differently. So this is, you know, getting things down on paper so that they can and out in the world so that they can reach more people and be a greater assistance. And I will say, in terms of editing, Issa does not like the editing process at all, nor do I. But I ended up with that lovely task of the slog through the mud. So it's really hard. But at the end of the day, you want to have something that people can really understand, that makes sense. You know, there are complex elements to this that we wanted to make very digestible. So,
you know, my work so far is I'm rewriting the Peter Rabbit book series, Beatrix Potter's, but they more forcefully engage with what's going on, environmental degradation, sweatshops, human trafficking. Yes, they're dark, but they're funny and yeah. Not for kids, as my friend found out to her detriment because she gave them to her friend's children. And now her friend's not talking to her anymore. She's like, those are not children's books. And I was like, didn't you read them? Because you wouldn't know. They're not.
Oh, gosh. Yeah.
And I think, you know, it's, I think in the books, which are, I think, They each end with a little bit of hope because it's going to be a greater world thing that we should be pissed off and angry about what's going on in the world and to other human beings and other creatures, anything with consciousness, including the Earth, which I believe is conscious. And, you know, somebody's got to bring the pissed offness. And I'm like here for that part of it. And then other people can bring the healing and the transformation and all of that. We need all of it. So I'm grateful. But you know what? I'm a huge fan of transformation, that whole alchemical process, right? Of turning lead into gold. And you could argue that the lead is, are those hidden stories or gremlins. They, those stories, those traumas, those incidents, they have something to teach us. They have value in themselves, but they can be transmuted into something where then we can step out into the world and bring beauty, bring grace, bring joy, and lead others so that they can find a path too to that, because that's what I kind of want for everybody. So
yes, absolutely. And thank you. And I'm looking forward to reading those books that you've written. They sound fantastic. And you know, and to the point of like anger or pissed offness, like that is the call to action. That is the call to action. You know, it's like, I'm mad because something's wrong. Now, what do I do? And then you take it, because, you know, some people will just be like, well, I'm just so mad and I'm just not going to try and, you know, screw the world and, you know, screw everybody. Like, that isn't helpful. And then you're not happy. But when you recognize that your anger is telling you something and that that is your call to action, then you figure out what it is you want to do. You don't have to change the world. You don't have to, like, you know, it can be anything, you know, that you take action to do that makes even the slightest difference in someone else's life, you know? So I think that's very important. And the way, you know, we think of like with work, with transformation. So in depth hypnosis, where in depth hypnosis is not the same thing as depth psychology, although depth psychology is very cool, but, you know, it all falls under the realm of transpersonal psychology, which is this psychology that recognizes the power of spirit in healing, right? That you need to connect to something larger than yourself. So it's a little bit different, but, you know, in the end, all roads lead to Rome, you know, they're always in. So transformation, why we say it's a model of transformation is because there are, it's often a rapid path. You know, we often get people who've been, you know, doing psychology for years and they've gotten a lot out of it. And psychology, you know, doing therapy is great. It helps you see yourself better and it gives you a place to, you know, different therapists have different tools that can be wonderful. And then we sometimes get people who've like gotten kind of plateaued and they'll say, I want to go deeper. Like, I know what my wounding is, and I just am not figuring out how to go deeper and transform it at a deeper level. And that's where depth hypnosis picks up the ball. You know, so we work with a lot of therapists, and then we have these tools that can do this sort of heavier lifting, deeper aspect of the work. When we go in, you know, to the altered state, when we find some part of ourself that we didn't realize was stuck, or some trauma that we didn't understand had been traumatic for us in the moment, but like when we look back on it, we're like, oh, I was just lost at the grocery store. That was a big deal. I'm fine. I'm, you know, I'm 40. I'm okay. So there's something that happens in the healing process. And there are a lot of healing processes and techniques that we use in depth hypnosis. But again, it's the person doing their own work. And I describe it as the kind of epiphany place. And it's where you have that, you know, not the conscious mind understanding using words like, well, I know that I had that trauma, so I just have to, you know, do this and I'll be better. That's helpful to know that. But when you get a full body knowing, you have this epiphany of what you had done. I stopped trusting people because I had that experience. And there may be multiple places where you had experiences that caused you to stop trusting people. And then you locate those and you bring light to that part of you that didn't know it. And there is an epiphany that happens, and that is a full body change. Like, people have actual shifts in how they're feeling and in how they're engaging in the world. So that's how I look at the transformative process and as being partially an epiphany that happens.
I love that word, epiphany. It's so beautiful.
Yeah.
Especially since, you know, seminary, studying all that stuff. And it's such an important time of year for those in the Christian religion, because it's like light shining forth after a period of darkness. And that's what's so beautiful. Well, I want to just say thank you for being on the podcast. And also, you know, I feel like you are moving the lever of the world. So if we put a lever underneath it, the work that you're doing, your institute is doing, your partner, your greater community, slowly but surely, you're moving the lever of the world. And we need more people to be doing that. And so I'm so grateful that I now know you, and I can be super excited. And I'm excited you're coming to Santa Fe, because I will be first in line at your book signing. But I'm grateful that you're in the world and you're doing the work that you're doing.
Likewise, I thank you for all of your presence and your such positive intention and such diligent work that you're doing, and this podcast, which is not only helpful to a lot of people, but really fun.
Thank you.
And I just wish you well in everything that you do. And I look forward to us encountering one another again.
Yes. It's another reason to get out of bed in the morning.
Yes. Yeah. Fun with nice people. There
yes.
you have it.
Yes.